only want what's best for him. We're only making plans for night.
I don't need headphones today because I don't have to listen to anybody. But if you want to participate in the discussion today, you can do that by commenting on the Facebook feed. And we'll answer your questions. I got a lot of questions. I thought that since this was the first one of the season that no one would be paying attention. And I'd be here by myself talking to myself. But we have a lot of questions that people sent in and comments and things they want me to talk about. I'm a little verklempt. I feel like I'm getting a cold. I think that, you know, I had surgery on my foot 2 weeks ago yesterday. And I haven't missed a day training. I haven't taken any time off, really. I've done cardio or trained with weights. I was supposed to go into the gym today and train legs, and quite frankly, I had something come up this morning, and I couldn't, and I'm glad, because I think I'm at the risk of being Carl, which Elisa will tell you. I overdo everything. I take everything to an extreme, and so I'm glad I'm taking off. I may actually take off the whole weekend and then train legs Monday. Give myself some time off because I feel like I'm getting a cold. I'm very congested. My eyes are itchy. So anyway, okay. We got a lot of good stuff to cover, and I want to cover it all, and I want to do it as quickly as possible. We're going to get to questions. This is a commercial-free broadcast for anybody who's interested in watching. You don't have to sit through any commercials today. The first thing I want to talk about is an email that I got from Lynn Wright in Arizona. She is in her 60s and has found Olympic lifting late in life, and she's loving it. And she sends me pictures of herself lifting, and she's got amazing form. And she found an article on GreedMed Info recently. It was from February 26th, about the Italian police raiding the house of two scientists, Doctors Antonetta Gatti and Stefano Montanari. These two doctors were doing purity research on vaccines. Apparently doing any research on vaccines today either targets you as a zealot or makes people investigate you. What they had done was they were looking at the purity of vaccines and what other things may be in them that could be harmful. And they found nanoparticles, not just of the aluminum salts that are supposed to be adjuvants, but they found actually stainless steel, tungsten, copper, and a variety of other metals and rare elements that don't belong in vaccines. They don't belong in vaccines because they can harm a fetus, a pregnant woman, a newborn babies, toddlers, with developing lungs and immune system and nervous systems. And the Italian police confiscated all their equipment, all their lab results, all of their computers. And we're waiting to hear more about this at this point in time. Really, what should have been done is the World Health Organization should have said, hey, this is interesting research. We need to look deeper into this. But today, if you everybody's making money on vaccines. You know, we've talked about on Casual Friday when we used to do Casual Friday. Elisa talked about how the CDC actually owns the patent on 21 vaccines. The CDC also owns the patent on cannabidiol for pain, interestingly enough. The CDC shouldn't own any patents on anything. They're a government agency. They're not supposed to be profiting. When they start making money on the industries that they're supposed to provide oversight to, they actually become potentially conflicted interests issues here because they're making money at the things that they're supposed to be regulating. You can't talk about vaccines today. The media has done a really good job of doing two things. If you talk bad about vaccines today, you are immediately marked as a zealot, a tin foil hat wearing idiot, or you're demonized. We've seen doctors lose their licenses for talking about vaccines negatively today. Because vaccines are considered a biologic, they fall under a special heading at the FDA where they don't have to do the kind of research to show that these vaccines aren't harmful. They're actually not held responsible for any type of vaccine illnesses or deaths. Our government actually has a specific division that pays out to people when vaccines harm or kill their children. But these two doctors were doing some interesting research, and you would think that people would want to know more. You'd think they'd say, hey, wait a minute, those things aren't supposed to be in vaccines. We need to do more research and see why they're in vaccines. So we want to keep an eye out for that story. Interestingly enough, it's been kept pretty hush-hush so far. I also received some questions, and I want to find this question here. It was actually posed by Jeremy Player on my Facebook wall. What's my verdict on niacin supplements for health? There's some interesting things going on in the niacin slash anti-aging arena. I have it on good authority that ChromaDex, the company that actually owns Niagen, which is the NAD ingredient, the nicotinamide adenine nucleotide, they own it. It's theirs, patented. So anytime you go to Life Extension Foundation or any company and you buy an NAD supplement, they're buying that raw material from ChromaDex. I have it on good authority that ChromaDex recently issued a letter to all of the people that they supply with raw materials and said, we're not selling it to you anymore. We're just going to sell it direct. So all these ads that you used to see on Facebook about NAD supplements and anti-aging, you notice they just disappeared. And actually, ChromaDex had to buy back a bunch of inventory from some companies like Jarrow, because Jarrow said, well, if you're not going to sell it to us, we don't want this inventory, take it back. And they did. So you're going to see NAD pop back up here shortly, but it's going to be sold directly to you by ChromaDex. So interestingly, what the industry is doing now is they're focusing on something called NMN, which is nicotinamide mononucleotide, which is the precursor to NAD. And now they're talking about how NMN is the way to go because they can't sell NAD any longer. So what do I think about this? I think that you can just take niacin, real nicotinic acid. I've talked about this on the show before. I think people are missing the boat by not supplementing with some amount of niacin. I don't care if it's just 100 or 200 milligrams a day. You want the stuff that gives you the flush, that gives you the itchy skin, because that's the only stuff that works. The potassium salts of niacin, the non-flush niacin, they don't work. If you take your niacin, your nicotinic acid with a meal, you won't get the flushing. And then also, if you go to any Kroger's or Rite Aid or any of these stores, they all sell 500 milligram caplets of slow-releasing niacin. It's basically niacin and some sort of cellulose, so it just doesn't dissolve quickly and hit your bloodstream. And you could take one of those a day and probably see the benefits of all of these metabolites of nicotinic acid. Or you can take the NMN or the NAD shortly. You'll be able to buy that again. And go right to the molecule that seems to be the most interesting. I predict that there's other molecules and other metabolites of nicotinic acid that possess value as well. I think nicotinic acid is a good thing to take. I think if you can afford the NMN or the NAD, you could take that too, but I think you should take them both. Because I think there's a lot more to nicotinic acid as it relates to health, longevity, and even performance. There could be some links to body fat reduction. So that's an interesting molecule, and I say thumbs up to nicotinic acid, but maybe don't take the more expensive stuff that you really don't need. So let's see. I have some good stuff, some upcoming shows. I got a nice email from two brothers, Mark and Darren Taylor, in Birmingham, United Kingdom. Their dad had a stroke. I'll read the email just to... So the original email said... It said, hey, Carl, me and my brother listen to your show. I'm big fans. I was hoping that you could help us with your knowledge that you've gathered and still gathering. Work on some great minds, forward-thinking people in physical culture lifestyle. My dad, who is 76, had a stroke on Sunday. This was back in February of 2018. He said he's now in the hospital, and we're still awaiting him to have an MRI scan. He was complaining about the National Health Service over there takes their time. So they can tell us the damage that has been done and what plans of action they will place to aid his recovery. I'm wondering, is there anything that we can give him supplement-wise to help his recovery and reduce the damage? I understand strokes are time-critical. I remember you saying that on your show, he said to me. I can't remember what it was, if it was for heart attack or stroke, which has now passed. The time window may have passed, but didn't know if there was anything we can do to help him from now. He is our world and raised me and my four brothers single-handedly, so it is our time to look after him and give back. I've checked and seen a study giving omega-3s on SHR's website, also a study about reducing tau proteins, but this is still very early stage testing. I know you're a busy man. Of course I answered him. I not only answered him, but sent suggestions back then, and I'll read the email. So what I suggested is, yes, omega-3s are really good, but not in a supplement. I said, have your dad start eating more salmon. There's a lot of magic to omega-3s that we don't understand. We just think that, if you take a supplement, it's the same thing as actually eating a good piece of fatty fish. It's not. The other thing I suggested was what I used for my mother when she had her stroke was creatine monohydrate. There's so much good research out there on creatine monohydrate post-stroke, actually aiding the brain in building new neuronal collateral connections around the necrotic tissue in the brain that was caused by the ischemia reperfusion. When you have a stroke, it's like a pipe bursting. And so when the pipe bursts, it damages all the tissue around it. And that's called ischemia, which is the reduction of oxygen in blood and reperfusion. And all of a sudden, the blood and oxygen rush back after the stroke has occurred or resolved. And that actually is what does the damage in a stroke. So if you can arrest the post effects of a stroke, you can actually bring a person back to 100%. I brought my mother back to 100%. Creatine monohydrate has been shown in numerous studies to have profound effects post-stroke to help recollateralization and also minimize the ischemia reperfusion effect of the brain. The other thing that I said that we didn't have when my mom had her stroke, or I would have used it, is thymosin beta 4. I recommended that he get a research chemical company to ship him thymosin beta 4 somehow into the UK, and to give his dad 2 milligrams a week for, couple, 3 months. That would help resolve the stroke. And then also anything that increases growth factors, such as Frank growth hormone or secretagogues like GHRP6 plus modified growth factor 1 through 29, which I'm going to talk about because I have a good friend who's a physician who asked me a question about my opinion on taking growth hormone versus the secretagogues. I'm going to answer that in a minute, right after this. And so they followed my advice. They've got him eating salmon a couple, 3 times a week. They did not get the thymosin beta 4, and I can understand why. It's probably risky having that shipped in. He said, when I asked him this morning if I could use his name, he said, yes, of course. It's excellent to get the information out there so people understand. We were going to update you on his progress anyway, so here it is. Dad's doing well. We have him on Crealkaline, and that's a good choice for an elderly person. An elderly person doesn't want to have to take a 5-gram scoop of creatine once or twice a day. And Crealkaline, while there's a lot of people out there who say it's no better than creatine monohydrate, because it really is creatine monohydrate, the buffered Crealkaline allows you to take less and get the same effects as a larger dose of monohydrate. And for elderly people, that's important. If you give them a couple capsules and say, here, Pop, take this and drink this water versus, oh, I've got to mix this into your drink and stir it up. You've got to drink this whole drink. It's much easier to get them to take 2 capsules a couple times a day. And so they have them on Crealkaline. They have them eating cans of salmon at least 3 times a week. And we're getting him on exercise. They just ordered an X3 bar, which I'll give you a coupon code here. The X3 bar is an amazing at-home workout piece of equipment. If you use the code SUPERHUMAN50, you save $50 off at x3bar.com. Little pimp there. But they've got him an X3 bar, and they have him training with it. The Beta 4, we're still working on getting. Really can't thank you enough. He's doing fantastic. God bless you. Of course. Thank you. Thank you. So that's the question and answer on the stroke stuff. You can bring a person back 100% from stroke. There's no doubt about it. But you've got to leverage some things that work. And so that's important. Now let me go ahead and get to a question sent to me on Facebook by Steve Bieto, who is a podiatric, surgeon. He says, hey, Carl, what's your thoughts on exogenous growth hormone versus GH secretagogue peptides? Listening to your podcast over the years, there seems to be some contradictions. So there's really no contradiction. What I will say is this. I think that if you're looking for, like, okay, so I'm healing my foot post-surgery. So I am using growth hormone, but I'm also using secretagogues at the same time for different reasons. So if I want to raise IGF-1 and growth factors to a level that my body is just not capable of doing, I'm going to use 2 to 3 IUs of frank growth hormone, good growth hormone from a pharmacy, not something from some website where you don't even know what you're getting, because that's dangerous, quite frankly, if you use it long term. So I would use the growth hormone, the frank growth hormone, during the most critical healing time of a surgery, for instance. And then I would switch off to the secretagogues, and here's why. Frank growth hormone is just one form of growth hormone. It's the 191 amino acid form of growth hormone. There are several forms of growth hormone. Dr. Mara DePasquale wrote a book about peptides and amino acids that is actually used in medical schools now. It's translated in 4 or 5 different languages. It is the go-to book on peptides and amino acids. And in the book, he has several chapters that detail that the different types of growth hormone and growth factors that the pituitary pulses when the demand to produce growth hormone occurs. So when growth hormone releasing hormone hits the pituitary, it squirts out a variety of growth hormones, not just the 191 amino acid form. In fact, Anthony Roberts, when the NFL started testing for growth hormone, Anthony Roberts shared with me that there is a 193 or 194, not the 192, which actually is not that good to use, but there's 193, 194 a form of growth hormone that actually works better at lower doses and is completely undetectable by the new growth hormone test, because all they're testing for is the 191. So your pituitary puts out all of those. So if I was going to tell, if someone said to me, I want to leverage growth hormone for the long haul, for the rest of my life, I would tell them to use GHRP6 or GHRP2 in conjunction with modified growth releasing factor 1 through 29, which is basically growth hormone releasing hormone. That's what it is. It's actually CJC1295 without the drug affinity complex. The CJC1295 is growth, modified growth releasing factor 1 through 29 with the addition of a side chain that makes it bond to the albumin in your blood and stay active for up to 7 days. But modified growth factor 1 through 29, when you inject it, it's in your system and out of your system, just like real growth hormone releasing hormone that your pituitary produces. So it's anatomically correct, more biologically correct. I would use that for the long term, and I do. I use that very first thing in the morning when I wake up because it does 2 things. It causes my pituitary to really squirt out a bunch of growth hormone. Even in the old pituitary, if you use them both together, if you use one or the other, you don't see it. But if you use both a GHRP and modified growth factor 1 through 29 together, you will pulse out a youthful big old spike of growth hormone. I use that first thing in the morning because the GHRP 6 also stimulates the production of cortisol, and I want cortisol to be high in the morning. In fact, I think that people who have deranged adrenal function, there's really no such thing as adrenal fatigue. There's adrenal dysfunction where it's producing too much cortisol at night and you can't sleep, and in the morning it's not producing enough and you have brain fog and you're tired. You can actually help reestablish the appropriate cyclicity of the adrenals by using GHRP6 first thing in the morning, because it'll squirt out a bunch of cortisol, and you'll actually feel awake. When I take that shot in the morning, I actually feel about 15 to 20 minutes later, I actually feel energized. If you use too much modified growth factor 1 through 29, you'll know you're using too much, because you'll actually get a little lightheaded, because the inrush of IGF-1 will actually clear glucose out of the bloodstream, and it's already low in the morning because you've been fasted. The only company that I trust to buy peptides from at this point in time, until pharmacies start filling prescriptions, which is right around the corner, I am so deeply immersed in what's happening right now with the International Peptide Society. And now there is about 6 pharmacies that the FDA has approved to fill prescriptions. Peptides are going to be mainstream very shortly. You're going to see them advertised on television very shortly. But if you use a high enough dose of those two things together, you'll actually get a little woozy, a little lightheaded. You'll have to eat something, because it'll clear sugar right out of the bloodstream. Those of you who remember Dat Be True and his fantastic website about peptides, the appropriate dose where you need to start, and most people need to be, is 100 micrograms of modified growth factor 1 through 29 and 100 micrograms of GHRP6 first thing in the morning for men, and half that dose for women, 50 micrograms and 50 micrograms. Those are the doses that will produce the most pulse of growth hormone without what is considered overflow. So those are the saturation doses. All these receptors will get hit, and there won't be any excess running around to make you lightheaded, make you woozy, make you feel sick, make you feel nauseous. A lot of people talk about even feeling nauseous when they use too much. So that's the answer to that one, Steve. I would use growth hormone post-op, maybe for a week or two, and then switch to the growth hormone secretagogues. And I would use the growth hormone secretagogues indefinitely for the rest of my life, and I do intend to. Let's see. We have some other questions here. Let's get to them. Rick Pack wants to know, he said, I'm behind on Superhuman Radio. Are you still avoiding caffeine? I will love it. I still love it, but I couldn't use as much as you were. And I was using excessive doses. I was abusing caffeine. So I gave up caffeine completely for a very long time. Just recently, as of the surgery, which was 2 weeks ago yesterday, you see that piece of dust? Man, it was over here. Anyway, I started to drink Starbucks coffee again. I was drinking Cafe Americanos. And keep in mind that my gut has been feeling so great. My silent GERD had gone away. I have been drinking Starbucks for the past 2 weeks, and I'll be damned, my stomach is all jacked up again, and my silent GERD is coming back. I just said to Elisa this morning, I said, I've been drinking Starbucks coffee, and my stomach's all messed up again. She goes, well, why did you start? And you know what it is? You're feeling good. You forget that this caused this or that caused that. And I'm feeling good. And I'm like, oh, I'm drinking Starbucks. It's okay. It doesn't bother me. I'm good. And sure enough, in 2 weeks, my stomach is all effed up again. And so now I have to give up Starbucks coffee. I'm telling you, Starbucks coffee and probably some of these other boutique coffees are causing a lot of the gut problems that people have today. I'm convinced of it. You won't hear about it in the mainstream because Starbucks is a billion-dollar company, and they spend a lot of money and they pay a lot of money, and they're a good company and everybody loves them. But something about the coffee, it could be that it's so robust, the particulate matter that's left in there that you're actually swallowing, those little microgranules that are floating around in there, the actual particles of the coffee bean itself that get through the filters are actually irritating the stomach. I don't know what it is, but I got to tell you, I can't. So I'm not using caffeine. I was drinking coffee for the past 2 weeks, but I am off of coffee again. I'm not doing that anymore. So let's see, more questions. Let me go to questions here. Jeremy Player, I answered that. Mike Gagliardi said tab or diet right, to which I answered neither. Jolt Cola, all the sugar and twice the caffeine. I was just joking. I don't drink soda at all. Let's see. I've got an email here from Bridget McCarcher. She says, I've been listening to your show for almost 2 years now, And lately I've been listening religiously. Thank you so much to all of you who listen to the show. I mean, thank you for listening. I wouldn't have a job. I'm wondering how I can listen to all your older shows. I really want to go back and listen to all of them. You've shared so much wonderful information, and I really want to thank you for that. In the podcast app on iPhone, the show goes back as far as show number 1,457. I was wondering if there's any way to get prior shows. No. Not right now. And why is that? Okay. Because at one point in time, we had 1,000 shows in our RSS feed. And we got penalized by iTunes for that. They actually pushed our show down further. You would think that if you have more content, they would push you up. But they don't want you to have more than, I forget, Arben, our web guy, I don't know if it's 200 or 400 shows in the RSS feed. If you have more than that, you actually get pushed down, which doesn't make any sense. Like, why wouldn't you want to push up the shows that have the longest lifespan and the most content? No. And so we had to reduce our RSS feed in order to meet both Stitcher, iTunes, and quite frankly, iHeartRadio's requirements. All of them have the same kind of requirement for the RSS feed. So at this point in time, the only way for me to get the older shows would be to put them up on the server and find a different way for you to access them other than your apps. She also had a quick question. You mentioned in the show not too long ago about cell phone radiation and how they are affecting the gut microbiome. There's a study by the National Toxicology Program confirming that cell phone radiation increases the risk of cancer and may harm children's health. My friend posted this on Facebook, and I'm trying to get my hands on the study, but I'm wondering if you have any studies about microbiome. I do, actually. I don't have it right now. Elise is the one who found it for me. I've looked high and low. I'll find the study for you, Bridget, and I'll send it to you, and I'll also post it on Facebook. So there is research showing that the RF produced by cell phones does cause changes in the microbiome, and those changes may actually promote obesity, because we have two different phyla in the stomach. We have Bacteroidetes or Bacteroidetes, whatever you want to call them, and Firmicutes. And I believe it's Bacteroidetes that's associated with lower energy utilization and greater food uptake, nutrient uptake from the food you eat, which leads to obesity. And I believe the Firmicutes are the opposite. It could have it wrong. It could be one or the other. But one of them definitely promotes obesity, and one of them promotes leanness. And the study showed that the cellular telephone radiation increased the proliferation of the ones that cause obesity. So it could be part of the obesity model today. We don't know. But that research is coming forth. But I've known about cellular telephones and cancer. We know, everybody knows about that. But the interesting discussion that is yet to take place is there was a study done in Scandinavia that showed that just 8 hours a day in the standby mode to pregnant rats caused the babies to be born without something called mirror neurons. Mirror neurons are implicated in the development of of autism. And so what they discovered with mirror neurons are not in your brain forever. They're only in your brain when you're very, very young, because they cause proprioceptive effects, so that when you look at your mom and she's smiling, you smile back. Like, you put it together that what she's doing with her face, oh, you can do it too, like this. Those are called mirror neurons, and they're very important for the progression of learning in young children, and especially that where they mimic facial expressions and hand motions and all that sort of stuff. And what they found out was that exposure in gestation caused the babies to be born without mirror neurons. And that is, the lack of mirror neurons was implicated in the onset of autism in human babies. And so what they said was, cell phones, exposed to pregnant mothers may be contributing. And see, this is the problem with autism. I've talked about this on the show before. So it's not one thing that causes autism. It's a complete assault on the immune system and other changes as well. And so all of these things that cause autism happen in concert. And this is why it's so hard for them to reproduce an autism model, because if they're not using cell phone radiation in that autism model, they're going to go, oh, guess what? These things don't cause autism, when in fact they may be one of the things that causes autism. The problem is that science has a problem looking for only wants to look at one thing. Well, no, vaccines don't cause, well, maybe vaccines cause autism when these other six things happen. And that's why every child that gets a vaccine doesn't develop autism. So cell phones are an interesting discussion when it comes to fetal development and autism, and needs to be looked into deeper. But are we going to look into it deeper? Probably not, because the cellular telephone industry is so big, nobody wants to give up their iPhones, let's be honest. And as a result, they're probably going to be left out of this discussion completely. So let's see. We have some other questions here. Let's see here. Let me go to another page that I have here. And please feel free, if you're watching live, you can post a question right now and I'll answer it. Just post it on the Facebook stream here, and I promise you I'll get to it. Okay, so let's see. We have some other questions. Here they are. So, Tim Gwynn, he poses a really interesting discussion here. All right, I'm going to read it first. He says, I've been musing more and more on the idea that regular lifting very heavy weights is as out of tune with our evolutionary history as eating Pop-Tarts. No hunter-gatherers were going out trying for new PRs in rock lifting or scheduling each morning to drag heavier and heavier logs. He's right. They would consider that ridiculous. I'm not arguing that weightlifting is bad per se, any more than Olympic level training, but it's not aligned with our evolutionary makeup, and so is likely not a pathway to the best health and longevity, i.e. torn muscle attachments, torn tendons, crushed discs, crushed foot, and a path to longevity and health. On the other hand, most so-called hunter-gatherer style exercise programs are embarrassing, cartoonish, mimicry of climbing over rocks, climbing trees, etc. What would an evolutionary aligned exercise program look like using our current scientific knowledge? And I have to really pay a lot of respect to Nate Morrison for this. If you haven't caught Military Fitness Radio because you think it's not for you, you really need to listen, because it's for everybody. But Nate talks about the importance of manual labor. Now, people are like, no, I don't want to do manual labor. I don't want to start building walls. But the reality is that what hunter-gatherers did was promote the progression of their small civilized areas, right? So they built stuff. They hunted. They raised children. They fended off attacks. And so when you look at these things, they look very similar to manual labor. And in the post, I said the short answer is become a construction worker. And really, while people are like, oh, that's funny, I'm not kidding. I predicted years ago, when some of the inactivity equals illness discussions started coming out from science, that 100 years from now, the jobs everybody's going to want is the landscaper and the brick mason, because these jobs where you sit hours a day will lead to disease and death. And those people who are working out in the fields and in the sun, they're getting vitamin D, they're living the way the body was designed to live that we look down on now. We think, oh, I don't want to be manual labor. I don't want to go to a trade school. You know, I want to be important. I want to be an Indian chief. Well, we're going to find out that those jobs that we turn our nose up, our smug noses up at, because, oh, he's a manual laborer, they're the ones that they're going to live longer and be healthier and not get sucked into the medical system. And so the reality is that if you want to live more like a hunter-gatherer, look at what they did to build a community. They built stuff. They constructed things. They were like housewives. who clean and take care of children are living more like our evolutionary ancestors than a career woman who goes and sits at a desk for 8 hours a day. But the career woman is looked at like, oh, well, she's so great. You know, she's working. Well, that's work too, raising children and cleaning a house and doing laundry and hanging curtains and all that stuff. That's physicality. That's what we were designed to do. So I don't think you have to overthink this at all. I think that if you want to live a more ancestral life, then you need to be active, and you need to be active in your community. Maybe join Habitat for Humanity, get busy building houses. That's the stuff that's going to reward you. And that's the stuff we are biologically designed to do. But don't give up weightlifting. It's good, too. It's important. It's better than not doing anything. Let's be honest. Adam Rogers says, testosterone replacement therapy and reproduction for those trying to have families. Best use of HCG and or Clomid when on TRT to assist with successful pregnancy. It's a really good question. So first of all, I know a lot of people who are on testosterone and high doses, like a gram a week. I know two people that are on a gram a week and have had babies, numerous babies. Being on TRT doesn't mean that spermatogenesis isn't taking place. It very well may be. You're right. I had a hiccup. Using things like Clomid and HCG will increase the likelihood that spermatogenesis is going to work. Spermatogenesis is interrupted when you're using testosterone because signals have stopped being sent to the testes, all signals, right? So the signal, Leydig cells are stimulated to produce testosterone, but the testes also produce sperm, not semen. Semen is produced in the prostate and the vesicle organs, but sperm cells are produced in the testes. And you are looking at follicular hormones that produce sperm, and you're looking at follicle-stimulating hormones that produce sperm, and you're looking at gonadotropin-releasing hormones that stimulate the Leydig cells to produce testosterone. Well, when testosterone is being used, it shuts both of them off. Now, different men have different levels. Some guys can be on a gram a week and still have a baby. But if you're not one of those guys, then yes, using HCG, in my opinion, would be a better alternative than Clomid. HCG will actually cause the testes to produce everything that they're supposed to produce. You know, they produce progesterone. Think about that, right? One of the reasons that I believe that men, after 1 year of being on TRT, don't feel as good, start losing hair, is because of the increase in DHT. Well, the natural thing that blunts the production of DHT by downregulating the biosynthesis of DHT is the 5-alpha reductase enzyme is progesterone. So when progesterone goes away, you start producing a lot more DHT. DHT causes male pattern baldness, and it also causes bacne, causes hair all over the body, hair to start sprouting out of your ears. So I think personally HCG is a better choice. Clomid has been associated with depression in men. Some men get really moody when they start using Clomid. They don't like the way they feel. They don't feel as masculine, let's say that. So I would go to HCG, but I would first do a sperm test before you do anything. I'm telling you, I know guys that are doing a gram a week that are having babies. So not everybody responds the same to TRT. Kirkland Warletti, who was on the Blueprint Power Hour with us not too long ago, said, what about curcumin affecting hypertrophy? Indirect IGF-1 depression through SIRT1 is the argument being thrown around. How far away from training would you take it? Well, there's a really good study that shows if you take either a gram and a half or 3 grams of a standardized curcumin product that's standardized for the highest amount of curcumoids, that you will actually increase the protein synthetic response to training. Just one study has been done. So I don't know that curcumin has a negative effect on hypertrophy, given that, and if you search around for that study, you'll find it. They actually used the Sabinsa curcumin, which is called C3. That's their patented trademark name, C3, which is standardized for the highest amount of the three curcumoids, or what they call important curcumoids. You can find that study. But I think there's a bigger issue that needs to be discussed about turmeric and curcumoids, which are in turmeric. And that is not everybody. Whoa, no sound. Okay. Test. Looks like it's going out. I'm taping. I don't know what the problem is. Okay, it's back. Oh, I know what's happening. I got to separate something out. I bet the sound is gone right now again, right? Was the sound just gone again, John? I know what I did, so next time I'll fix it. Anyway, the thing that we need to discuss about turmeric and curcumin for a second is not necessarily whether it affects hypertrophy, but more importantly, are you capable of using it? So the microbiome of different races is different. For instance, a lot of drugs that we use here don't work on the Indian population in India. They have to use different drugs there than they use here. Like SSRIs that we sell here are not the same SSRIs that these American pharmaceutical companies send to India, because the microbiome influences the bioavailability of certain drugs. Well, if it affects drugs that way, what about herbs and spices? If you cook, and I just figured this out myself, I can't use turmeric anymore. I've been using it for so long, and every night I burp up turmeric. And I realized after doing some reading, my microbiome may not be optimized to digest turmeric. Not everybody's is. Just the same way that when you travel abroad and you eat food, say Vietnam, I know a lot of people go to Vietnam and they eat the food there and they get sick. And it's not because the food is dirty, because the Vietnamese people next to you are eating it. They have different microbiomes that protect them against certain things and allow them to metabolize certain things. I have a strange feeling that in the years to come, you're going to read a study that says turmeric doesn't work for everybody. In fact, in some people, it increases inflammation, because if you are getting what could be considered an allergic reaction to turmeric, what's an allergic reaction? You know, if you get GERD, it's because the esophageal sphincter is relaxing. That's a nervous system function. Okay. So if you take turmeric and it gives you GERD, then chances are it's affecting your nervous system in a negative way. It's doing that to other nerves in the body too. It's causing them to relax too much. And that could be an allergic type reaction. And if it's an allergic type reaction, you are actually stimulating inflammation in your body. So you heard it here first. People are going to say, Carl, you're crazy. Turmeric is fantastic. I'm saying maybe not for everybody. It may not be good for everybody out there. It may actually be bad for some people. Some people digest it. Some people don't. So the question to really ask is, is it good for you to take turmeric? Does it agree with your system? And then you can discuss whether or not it's affecting hypertrophy after that. Let's see. We got more questions popping up here. I'm trying to find them. Man, let's see here. Let's go ahead and go through. Let's see what I've got on the list here. We're coming pretty close to the end anyway. I just wanted to do an hour today as the introduction back to a Friday show. I haven't been doing anything on Friday for so long since Elisa left. Elisa's doing great. She's working with Metagenics. They have some amazing products. I'd love to get them as a sponsor. What a great supplement company they are. Oh, I know what I want to talk about. I want to talk about, for a second, being grateful. Okay. So everybody's all big about being grateful. And I think it is important to be great, to have gratitude about your life and feel grateful about things. But being grateful doesn't mean that you have to say yes to everything. And it also doesn't mean that you can't get angry. You know, I saw an argument on Facebook the other day where a guy was getting mad at somebody else for a comment that they made. They made a really derogatory comment to this person, and this person came back, and that person who threw the first punch said, you should find more things in your life to be grateful for. Just because you're grateful doesn't mean that you're not going to strike back at somebody who's talking to you in a derogatory tone. I just want to get that out there because I love how people try to twist things, and especially on Facebook where everything is in a sentence and you know, like oh, if you're angry, you're not grateful. That's not true. Angry people can be grateful too. They're just angry at you right now. The other thing I wanted to mention is this. With the school shootings, okay? This is a little critical thinking, okay? The day after the last big school shooting, every school in the country should have ordered metal detectors. This recent shooting where the security guard may have actually shot the perpetrator after the perpetrator shot two people. If they had metal detectors at the doors of that school, he doesn't get in. Because in order to have a metal detector, you have to have someone manning it. You have a person there that has a gun, just like when you go into a federal building. Like, why aren't we applying critical thinking here? I'm actually having a guy on the show in 2 weeks from the antidepressant standpoint, because I have talked negatively about antidepressants for as long as I can remember. Well, there's a guy out there who's connected all the dots between all these mass shootings, and he has gotten the information about the drugs that these mass shooters have been on. And while we're here talking about gun control, which, you want to know the truth, take the AR-15 away. I say take the AR-15 away. This is critical thinking, right? Give it up. Big deal. There's so many other guns out there to buy. Take it away. But when guns aren't used, or some other gun is used, they're going to say, well, now we got to take that gun away. We had a kid just blowing people up in Texas, right? He didn't even use a gun. Why aren't they looking at the instruments he used to build bombs and go, oh, we got to get rid of wristwatches with timers on. We got to get rid of this. We got to get rid of that. This discussion has become silly because we're not looking at the real components that are at work here. Number one, mental health. But that doesn't mean a person is crazy. That could mean that a kid has been on Ritalin and antidepressants since he's 11 years old. And he has nothing. He feels nothing about life anymore. He's so depressed and he's considering suicide himself. And he figures, you know, I'm so miserable. I'm going to take some people with me. I'm going to go to my school. I'm going to blast it up. We're not talking about the real problems here. But more importantly, for crying out loud, put metal detectors at every door. You've got them in government buildings. You've got them anywhere where anybody's worried about someone coming in with a gun. They have metal detectors. Well, now that we know that people are coming into school with weapons, because I heard someplace that they're saying, well, the politicians there are saying we're going to have every kid has to have an ID badge, and we're only going to let people in whose backpacks are clear. Now, think about this. They did this in retail years ago, right? Because they didn't want people stealing stuff from the cosmetic department. So the women have to carry clear bags when they work there. But the idea that you're going to have people carry clear bags, they can still hide a gun in their pants. What are you going to go to? Clear pants? No, put friggin' metal detectors at the doors of all the schools. Let's stop being dumbasses here. Let's really address the problem. Think about it. Put metal detectors in. Nobody's coming in with guns now. They may come in with something else. Then we can address the real problem. Why are these kids so effed up in the head that they want to kill everybody? But that's just a little critical thinking, right? Let's see what else I got here. I talked about Starbucks. I talked about vaccines. Let's see here. Give me 1 second. I know I got a couple of things I want to cover. Oh, upcoming shows. Oh, this is great. So I got into it on Facebook the other day when I posted that post that said, if you want to save money on alkalized water, just add minerals to it. Because that's how you can alkalize water, add minerals to it. So I had a bunch of zealots who sell a specific type of water that works through electrification. I've got a scientist coming on next week who's going to talk about this type of water process. So those of you who know anything about nuclear power plants, you may have heard the term heavy water before. Heavy water is water that has a high level of deuterium. Deuterium is, and so normal water is H2O, one hydrogen, two oxygen. Deuterium is 2H2O, two hydrogens, two oxygens. The reason deuterium is so interesting is Dr. Laszlo Boros is coming on the show Monday, and he's written the definitive book on deuterium. Deuterium may actually be the link to cancer. When deuterium meets the mitochondria actually breaks trying to process it. And we already know from Dr. Thomas Seyfried's work that mitochondria is what causes cancer, not the genetic. The genetic changes occur after the mitochondria switches into anaerobic respiration, and that's only after the mitochondria is broken. Well, deuterium may be playing a role in the onset of cancer. And guess how they make heavy water for nuclear power plants? They electrify the water. So I've actually reached out to this company that makes electrified water, and they say, well, we're alkalizing water by electrifying it. And I've actually reached out to them and asked, have you guys tested your water for deuterium? No one's testing for deuterium. This is brand new. The only people who know about deuterium are people like Andrew Scarborough, because they're paying attention to some of the emerging science on cancer. The mainstream won't hear about deuterium for 10, 20 years, right? But the reality is that deuterium may be playing a role in a variety of different diseases. Diseases that start with the mitochondria, which, you know, could be chronic fatigue. A lot of diseases start with the mitochondria. They could all be affected by deuterium. And this particular water company that's selling this, you know, great alkaline water, they may actually been selling water that's higher in deuterium than water that comes out of your tap. That's not a good thing. So next week and the week after, I've got four shows scheduled that they'll all connect the dots. And the address, what thing we're going to address is this. We're going to have a nephrologist come on and talk about the realities of blood and tissue pH, okay? Because those things are controlled by your kidneys. If you're a healthy person, you cannot change the tissue or blood pH by drinking lemon water or drinking alkalized water or anything. I mean, you'd have to take large doses of bicarbonate. And we're going to have a gastroenterologist come on and talk about the dangers of lowering the pH of the stomach and what happens to the stomach when you chronically lower it, trying to balance the pH of your blood or your tissue. Then we're going to have Laszlo Boros come on and talk about what deuterium is and how it is linked to cancer, and more importantly, how electrifying water makes deuterium in the water. And then we're going to have Dr. Q Collins coming on in 2 weeks to talk about his personal research that he's working. He's just coming back from Australia. He was just speaking there. He is an oncology immunologist. So he looks at cancer from the immune system side. And his group has been curing cancer by lowering deuterium intake in humans, by giving them deuterium depleted water and having them use foods that are known to be low in deuterium. And they're having amazing results with it. So between the next 2 weeks, we're going to address and dispel the myths about alkalizing your body. Complete bullshit. Okay. It is like, unless you're taking gobs and gobs of bicarbonate, because that's what your kidneys and your body produce to buffer. They produce two different types of bicarbonate in cells. So if you're drinking lemon water, you're drinking smart water, you're not very smart. You're not alkalizing your body. You're not changing the pH of your body. Your body holds the pH between 7.4 and 7.6 continuously, day in and day out. It's got numerous systems that are designed to keep the pH of your blood stable. Now, tissue pH is different. The brain and the spleen, they operate at a slightly more acidic level, 7.7 to 8. 6.2 to 7.7. Other tissue, like the heart, 7.7 to 8, a little more alkaline. Muscle stays between 7.7 and 4. We know what lactic acid is, right? If you train and your muscles are burning, they're building up lactate. that lactate doesn't stay in the muscle. It's released into the bloodstream. So it actually has an effect on the pH of the body dramatically that actually lowers the pH temporarily because of the onset of these acids that then have to be buffered right away by the body. So this whole idea that you could eat certain foods and drink certain things and influence the pH of your body is nonsense because the body is always looking for homeostatic pH of around 7.7 to 7.4 in the blood, and the blood then influences all the tissue. So we're going to address that and dispel those myths that if you're wasting any money on alkalizing your body, you can save a bunch of money. Then we're going to talk about electrifying water to alkalize it. And if there is, in fact, deuterium in there, I wouldn't drink that water. But we're going to find out next week. I could be wrong. I'm having these people on. They're going to set me straight. Of course, people who are on the zealot side of this multi-level marketing business of selling these water systems that electrify your water and supposedly alkalize it, they want me to have their one scientist on who wrote the book about the product that they sell. I'm debating whether to have him on. I think if I'm going to have him on, I want to have him on with somebody from the nuclear physicist side who can speak about electrification and deuterium that's not selling a product, right? Has no vested interest in whether they sell their water product or not. So that's going to be interesting. So we're going to do that within the next 2 weeks. We'll have all four of those shows. And then we'll put it to sleep. And then I'm sure a lot of people are going to be butthurt out there because they've spent all this money on things that they want to change their body's pH. The one thing you can affect the pH of your blood to a certain degree, but it's momentary. It's not permanent. You can affect the pH of your muscles by loading with beta-alanine. But it only works when lactate kicks in and it suppresses the hydrogen ions. But those are very, very extreme things that most people aren't doing. You can't just drink water and change the pH of your blood or your tissue. That's just nonsense. So we'll get into that next week. I want to plug a couple people real quick. Thrive Market, thrivemarket.com/Supremo Radio, $60 worth of free organic groceries plus free shipping. The H Hemp Company, pain relief, reduced inflammation, improved health, and that is honesthemp.com. And we have a coupon code, actually. I don't see the coupon code here. Oh, yeah, SHR to get 20% off plus free shipping on your first order. The X3 Bar, one of the greatest workout products that you should have for your house. If you go to X3 Bar, that's X3Bar.com, and use the code SUPERHUMAN50, you save $50 off. I love it. It's fantastic. And then, of course, Butcher Box is now a sponsor. You may have seen my video where I got my first box the other day. They have a code of SHR. You get $10 off plus free bacon off of your first order. And then, of course, Health IQ. If you train and you eat healthy, why shouldn't you save money on your life insurance? And that is healthiq.com/SHR. That's the first come at me, bro. We got good questions this time around. Hopefully we'll get good questions next time. We'll see you next Friday. Most likely next Friday we'll be at the normal time of 12 o'clock. Unless you people like 3 o'clock, let me know. I can do it then as well. And we will go out with my favorite music. We're only making plans for Nigel by XTC. This is a great song from the 70s. When punk era was around, I was wearing a Bobby. All right, look, we'll see everybody Monday. We have a great show planned Monday. We got a grandmother who runs barefoot. She's going to talk about her barefoot play. She goes all over the country. Amazing. And then we've got Dr. Laszlo Boros coming on. We're only making plans for Nigel. Stop putting pieces together. Nigel just needs that helping hand. Hi. And if young Nigel says he's happy, he must be happy, he must be happy, he must be happy in his world.